across Northeast Dublin.
90.3.
This is Near FM.
I am joined now on the line by SIBTU Public Administrations and Community Division Officer Adrian Kane. Adrian, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Donny. How are you?
Adrian, there was a protest march held in Dublin on the 3rd of May in relation to the community sector and Section 39 healthcare organisations. Maybe first, before you talk about the protest, if you could explain what Section 39 healthcare organisations are, please.
Okay, I suppose probably the best way to explain it would be to give you examples of the sort of organisations I'm talking about and some of the more ones that your listeners would be familiar with. Irish Wheelchair Association would be a Section 39 employer. Rehab would be Enable Ireland. And they tend to also operate a lot in the disability sector, intellectual disability, physical disabilities as well. So that would be that side of the house, as it were. And you would also then be on the community side would be organisations. I suppose the umbrella organisations would tend to be the partnership companies and the leadership companies around the country. Tony. So on the Section 39, I suppose it's a kind of unique phenomenon in the state in terms of in other European countries, they would be directly supplied by these services would be directly provided by the state. But in Ireland, there is that remove. They are independent organisations, but are funded in the main by the state.
And we'll say, for argument's sake, an organisation now maybe that a lot of people would be very familiar with would be, and we see them on our streets all the time, are people usually in teams of two who go in and look after predominantly elderly and infirm people in their own houses, go in maybe in the morning, spend 20 minutes, half an hour there, come back in the afternoon and come back in the evening time. Would they be part of this group as well?
Some of them may be in terms of home help agencies, etc. You know, but I suppose what we were trying to do, Tony, in terms of the protest that we had the week before, we were trying to highlight the plight of these people who are kind of in a limbo situation that essentially provide public services, but they have very poor terms and conditions of employment. The vast majority of them wouldn't have received a pay increase in the last 14 years. In the health services and the Section 39 ones particularly, employers tell us that people are voting with their feet, that they're leaving Section 39 employment and looking for employment directly with the HSE itself because the terms and conditions are an awful lot better. So it's a strange kind of situation whereby we've put in claims across the entire sector. Employers would be in the main supportive of those claims because they can see that they're having problems retaining staff. But unfortunately, we have a situation whereby the government has refused to engage with us at all. We had one meeting back towards the end of last year with Minister Anne Rabbit, and unfortunately, we haven't had any engagement with the government since then.
And tell me this, Adrian, because it's kind of, this is where I sometimes get frustrated when I'm speaking to people like you, and it's not with you that I'm getting frustrated, but which government department are you supposed to liaise with? Because I appreciate that Anne Rabbit is the minister with responsibility for people with disabilities. It kind of comes under the umbrella of the Department of Health because that's what a lot of the work entails. And yet, if you're talking money, well, then it should be the Minister for Finance or Public Expenditure you'd be talking to. So is there a bit of bug-passing going on here between departments?
Yeah, well, I think that's a fair comment, and has led to the issue being more difficult to resolve. I mean, the way that we have put it, Donny, is that there needs to be a whole-of-government response. That's the reality of it, because if you... in terms of if you look at the funding streams, yes, they in the main probably are coming from three different departments, from the Department of Social Protection, the Department of Health, and the Department of Disabilities, etc. Right? So in reality, you do need a whole of government response, and we're not getting anything like that at the moment, because the fix that we're looking for isn't was in reality already in place, because what used to happen in most of these employments is that they used to follow the pay deals that would have been provided for under the social partnership agreement between 1986 and 2008. The pay in these sectors would have followed public sector pay increases. But since 2008, that hasn't happened, because you're into a situation whereby across that sector it's suffered huge cuts. In some respects, it's never recovered from that. But now we're left in a situation whereby we can't get any increases in pay for our members. And this is at a time, and I'm sure your listeners will know and are suffering as well in terms of, you know, the cost of living crisis that people have and trying to keep the wolf from the door and paying bills and all the rest of it. And you're looking at 8% inflation is now what we're running at. And yet these people haven't had any pay increase in 14 years. And we don't seem to have the ear of a government that's prepared to sit down and look at some sort of mechanism. And as I say, it needs a whole of government response to see how we can resolve pay and terms and conditions within the sector. Because it's not just pay, but most of these people don't have pensions. A lot of them are on fixed-term contracts. Sick pay schemes are as rare as hen's teeth in the area as well. So there's a whole body of work that needs to be done, because like, there are very critical services that are being provided. But unfortunately, we haven't had that engagement with government to date. Now, the Congress group of unions who were involved in this, there's a number of unions, ourselves, FORSA, and the INMO, sat down last Friday, and we're looking at a date of the 5th of July in which we are going to have a day's stoppage across a number of services, and they have to be identified yet. But kind of the people that we represent are at the end of their tether, and we need to, if we're really representing them, we have to do something. And if we're actually representing the interests of the service users as well, we need to do something.
Well, obviously, Adrian, because if you have people leaving in their droves, the service is going to suffer. And if the service suffers, it's the service user at the end of the day who suffers. And that is the person who's depending on these people to help them. Medical training in this field, we'll say, compared to your standard run-of-the-mill nurse, where are these people in relation to the medical expertise that they have?
Well, I wouldn't be a huge expert on the medical side of things, but an example that will come to mind is you look at the hospices. These would fall under non-public sector pay, and the INMO would represent people in that sector particularly, you know. And so, you know, if any of your listeners have had to use the hospice service, like it's a fantastic service, and you know, I mean, it's a very difficult space, obviously, to be working in. But those nurses would be qualified as the HSE, obviously, and more specialised in end of life care. But yeah, there would be no difference in terms of what they have gone through, how qualified they are, etc. I mean, we would have numerous examples of that right across, particularly, say, within that Section 39 space, where people would be doing identical jobs of public sector workers employed directly by the HSE, but their rates of pay, their conditions of employment would be totally at variance with.
And that's exactly, Adrian, that's exactly why I asked you the question, because I just wanted to set that parameter before I ask you my next question, which is, without being specific, obviously, or naming people or anything like that, but give me an example of, in ballpark figures, Adrian, I don't want you to be 100% exact, or I don't expect you to be, but just give me an example of the difference, we'll say, either weekly, monthly, or yearly, in the difference between a nurse in the HSE and a Section 39 nurse doing exactly the same job.
Well, I wouldn't have kind of figures on specifics on that, okay? But what I would say to you is that whereas there have been increases in public sector pay now over the last 2 years, there have been none in Section 39. And the differences, Donny, right across, not just, say, nurses, but, you know, across professional grades, across care assistants, etc., could vary anywhere between 5-15% in terms of differences in rates of pay. But again, they vary more so than in terms of, say, pension, sick pay, maternity leave. We were in the joint Oireachtas committee with a group of community sector workers, and they have no top up in maternity leave, whereas if you're working for, you know, a lot of large scale private sector or in the public sector, there would be a top up payment there. So pay is a huge issue, but it doesn't just stop there. It means that we have to have some sort of engagement with government that looks at trying to put in decent terms and conditions across the entire sector.
And I know you referred to it earlier, Adrian, that there's a number of unions involved in this, but yourself, Forsa and the INMO. But how many people does this actually affect?
Well, we would, those three unions would represent somewhere in the region of 30,000 members.
So, that's exactly the reason I wanted to answer that question. If you're talking 30,000, okay, and you've already said that a lot of people are at their wits' end because they simply can't keep the wolf from the door with the pay they're getting, so they're either leaving the sector or they're going to the HSE, or if they're young enough and if they can see their way to it, I would imagine maybe a lot of them are immigrating and doing the same job elsewhere in the world. Let us say, right, okay, this is only for the purposes of our chat this morning. Let's say half of them decide, to hell with this, I've had enough of it, and 15,000 of them leave. Does the whole sector collapse?
Well, I think, and you can see it in terms of the economy in general, it's a strange space we're in after the pandemic. And I mean, that there's still a spate of service industry jobs haven't opened up again after the pandemic. I'm hearing it every day in terms of difficulties with staffing right across that sector. And I have no doubt that people are voting with their feet, as it were, as you said, either going into the HSE proper or leaving the country altogether, or just opting out and looking at different employment. So we are getting to critical state in terms of, you know, a whole raft of these services of trying to retain people in employment to ensure that we can continue to provide these services.
But that begs the question, Adrian, and it's the obvious question to ask here. And, you know, again, I think you will hear my frustration borne out in this. Surely the Department of Health via the HSE have to know that this is a train wreck coming down the line at them. They have to see this happening in front of them. They have to know it's coming. And, like, what's the story? Just sit on our hands and bury our head in the sand, pretend it's not going to happen?
Yeah, I think in terms of senior public servants in the HSE know that there is a crisis here, but there doesn't seem to be the political will to address it, and that's the difficult space that we find ourselves in at the moment. And coming back to the point I made originally, Tony, like, this needs a whole of government response, you know, both from the Department of Health, Department of Social Protection, but finance ultimately caused the shots on it. And I think there is always a reluctance on the part of senior officials, particularly in the Department of Finance or the Department of Public Enterprise and Reform, to engage with us for fear that they create a connection with these people, that somehow that they become public servants by default, right? And I would be at pains to state that that's not what we're looking for, because a lot of the people that we represent want to continue to work in the community or Section 39. They like the autonomy that you can develop in those services away from the constraints in some respects of a more rigid approach by line departments, okay, and that services can evolve according to service need or use etc. But what they do want is that they want a decent rate of pay, and they want decent terms and conditions of employment. Now, I'm sure that we can find a way in terms of engaging with government that we can give them the type of securities that they want, for fear that they think we're trying to pull a quick one, to use that kind of language, in terms of delivering these workers as public sector workers. That's not what we're about. We are about trying to get them decent terms and conditions of employment.
And is there a danger as well that they may look at this and say, well, if we accede to these demands, then this group over here are going to be looking for parity, and that group over there are going to be looking for parity. Is there that danger with them?
There's no doubt. I mean, that's the sort of mentality that we're up against. But as I said, Donny, we actually had a mechanism in place for 20 years that worked, that gave that sort of security to government and senior public servants. So it's not as if we're trying to reinvent the wheel or that. There was a mechanism in which you could deliver decent pay to members across the entirety of this sector. So it's not at all, really, when you get down to it, all that difficult to resolve if there was the political will to do so.
Yeah, and I have, by the way, just so the listeners this morning will maybe get a grasp of how serious this is, I have a list here, and I'm going to read it out, of the organisations which is impacted by this. The Rehab Group, Western Care, Pieta House, no less, Employability, the Local Government Services, Ability West, Inclusion Ireland, Local Community Partnerships, and by God, do they do some work for the people, the Jobs Clubs, the Leader Projects, and the Irish Wheelchair Association. I mean, there is definitely one, but I would suggest probably 5 or 6 of those organisations in every community in the country, and if they start getting impacted the way this may impact the communities, Adrian, it's a no-brainer by politicians not to meet this head-on and deal with it, because at the end of the day, like I said to you earlier on, and I fully appreciate where you're coming from as a SIP2 administrator and organiser, but the loser at the end of the day is going to be the people within the community.
Well, I think it's incumbent upon us. We're fighting for them as much as we're fighting for our members. And I'd have to say this, Tony, that the people that we represent, they're very good at advocating for the people who use their services. They haven't been the most vocal in advocating for themselves, okay? And that's a problem we have. Hence, when I say to you, the lack of government engagement with us to date. And unfortunately, then, if people aren't prepared to talk to us, and it's very... We are very, very slow and very loath to take any industrial action across the sector because of any negative impact on service users. But we're really doing them a disservice if we don't up the ante on this.
Well, the thing about it is, Adrian, if you don't up the ante, the service is going to be gone completely. That's my reading of and listening to you this morning.
Yeah, and that's very true, Tony. Okay, and that really is the be-all and end-all of where we find ourselves at the moment.
And as we sit here on the 16th of May at almost 10 to 12, are you any closer to, never mind getting what you're looking for your members, are you even any closer to getting sitting down with a government official who may be in a position to engage with you fruitfully?
No, as it stands at the moment, no. We wrote again after that protest rally that we had in Dublin, we wrote again to the department of the Taoiseach, and as it stands at the moment, we have yet to receive a response to that letter.
Well, outside of anything else, could I say that, in my opinion, that's just bad manners straight away. But look, it is what it is. Adrian, I can assure you, as somebody who does a lot of work with the local partnership here, the Northside partnership here in Coolock, and I have the height of respect for them, and as you say, you listed out other places there. I mean, there isn't a family in this country, I think, at this stage, who haven't had the experience of hospices and organisations like that. We've seen the darkness into light recently from Pieta House. I will most certainly be keeping a very, very close eye on this, and I have no doubt I'll be coming back to you in the coming weeks. It won't even be months, because we are definitely going to help to drive this forward, because I think it's just unacceptable that communities would suffer because of what will be, at the end of the day, we're not talking in the greater scheme of things huge money either. And like, if these services go, you know as well as I do, when they're gone, everyone is throwing their hands up to heaven going, how did that happen? And they're very hard to get back, Adrian.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, Donny, and I appreciate the opportunity given to talk to your speakers or to your listeners this morning.
SIP2 Public Administration and Community Division Organiser Adrian Kane. Adrian, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
I thought
it was going to be an interesting chat, but I just didn't realise until we spoke to you how grave the situation is. But Adrian, once again, we will be keeping in touch with you, and thank you so much.
Thanks, Tony.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you go, my friends. If you, as if you didn't know it, that is that's a catastrophe in the making if those organisations start getting impinged, and they will. There is no doubt about it. You've heard it there from Adrian. People are either going to the HSE, they're leaving the sector completely, getting work elsewhere, or they're immigrating. The person in the community, at the end of the day, is the one who's going to suffer because of this.
Across Northeast Dublin.
90.3.
This is Near FM.